Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Popular campus bar in Eugene. I don't know if you remember the campus bars that were near your college campus. I do. I remember all of the establishments that were around the campus that I went to college at. Popular college bar in Eugene, Taylor's. A lot of you know the history of Taylor's. You know that we're talking essentially about an institution that is essentially established in 1922, Fred and Hirsch Taylor, jazz legend B.B. King, John Belushi, they were Animal House, went to Taylor's, so did a lot of athletes on campus and students on campus, and Taylor's is now closed. Chelsea Deffenbacher is a crime reporter at the Eugene Register Guard, has done phenomenal work in reporting this story. I have read it all, and nobody's doing it better than Chelsea, and she's joining us now. First of all, really nice job reporting on a story that has to be getting a lot of attention there. How big a story is this in Eugene?
Oh, it's a pretty big story, yeah. One of our most read so far this year.
Tell us how you came to this story. Like, when's the first time you realize there's trouble at Taylor's?
It first came to my attention in 2016. It was towards the end of the year, and I checked search warrants that are filed in our circuit court, and I had seen a search warrant filed by UOPD that accused a bartender at the bar of drugging women. He had been accused by, I think, 5 different women who didn't know each other that all had very similar stories, but that bartender was never charged. And so I wrote that story initially and then just kept checking on it and followed up on it quite a few times over the following couple years until the OLCC came down with their decision.
The decision that the OLCC rendered essentially pulls the liquor license, which means you can't serve alcohol, which means, you know, they're going to have a hard time staying in business. What did you find when you went over there this week? And when did they officially close versus when were they supposed to close? This kind of dragged out a little bit.
It did, yeah. So how this part of the story kind of came to my attention was in the summer of 2018, and I was contacted by a student who had read my story about the bartender, and she had a similar incident that had just happened to her. And in the meantime, the bar had changed owners. So I called the OLCC to ask about the liquor license, given this new person's very similar story about being drugged and sexually assaulted. And so I called the OLCC to see if they were aware of that and if anything would happen to the liquor license. And when the new owner came in May 2017, he was given the current license that had been with the previous owner, but he had to reapply in mid-2018. And so when he reapplied, he was denied. And because of that, there was a hearing that was held just in June of last year, and then the decision that happened just last week. They were told on Thursday that they would not be getting a liquor license issued to them at all, but that it didn't expire. Their temporary license didn't expire until 7 a.m. on Tuesday. And so Monday was their last hurrah. It was a packed house, and it was $40 cover to get in. And I've heard from other people that they ran out of alcohol at some point, like certain types of alcohol. And then at 7 a.m. on Tuesday, there was a note taped up to the door that said closed forever, and it was taped up with a Band-Aid.
Chelsea Deffenbacher is our guest, Eugene Register Guard crime reporter. In your story, this jumped out at me, along with a lot of the anecdotes where people say, oh, this is a great place, I wish it weren't closing. 492 times from October 2008 to February 20th of this year, officers were called to Taylor's. That blows my mind. 492. How does that compare to like a normal bar?
We compared it to Rennie's, which is a very, it's another campus bar. I wouldn't say it's similar, but it's another campus bar in the same area. And in that same time period of, I think, 12 years, cops have only been called there 89 times.
Wow. It just jumps out at me. 42 documented incidents, such as druggings, assaults, and rapes from June 2017 to June 2019. Did that not register with ownership, where they just went, hey, we have to change something? Or does it take losing your liquor license?
You know, I'm not sure, and I've reached out to the owner, and I have not heard back as far as this is concerned. When the initial decision was made that they were going to lose their liquor license, before he requested that hearing, he had told me that he imposed a cover, he got new cameras, and that they got rid of their bucket drink. That was pretty popular. The OLCC had recommended that they get rid of that bucket drink. I just found out last week.
Give me an idea what a bucket drink is for our listeners who don't know it.
Well, it's a drink that's served in a sand pail, like a pretty big bucket, and it is a bunch of different kinds of liquors. I don't know what's in it, and a Red Bull that is stuck on top of it.
Oh, man.
But I've heard that the reasoning behind asking them to remove that is that it's a large surface area for someone to drug you, and also, you can get very intoxicated off just one drink.
You talk to a lot of people who will call you and say, look, I was drugged, or mm-hmm. I had a bad experience. And again, this is not, nobody has been criminally charged. But those conversations as an investigative reporter have to be heart-wrenching to you to hear the details of people who've just had horrific life experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's not lost on me at all that these people are, a lot of them are college students, and many of them had just turned 21 and they were out celebrating their birthdays or, out celebrating with friends at Taylor's for the first time, something they look forward to ever since they start at the university. They've always, wanted to go to to Taylor's to, celebrate with their colleagues. And, this is their first experience in that kind of an environment.
Now, the temporary liquor license, as you mentioned, expired 7 a.m. Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
You go over there. I saw the photograph on your story. Mm-hmm. What was on the door?
It was a receipt. The back of the receipt said, closed forever, no trespassing. And it was taped to the door with a Band-Aid.
That's just, that screams, we're out, like nothing else.
They could continue to operate as a restaurant if they wanted to, because they can still serve food. They just can't serve any alcohol, but I think they see the writing on the wall as far as that's concerned. So they've closed their doors, and I've heard from other people that they were also moving some items out of the restaurant that morning, but I didn't see that.
Chelsea Deffenbacher with us. She is a crime reporter, Eugene Register guard. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission, the OLCC, has not given them a license. They have no liquor license. Is it as simple as they sell the establishment, someone else applies for a liquor license? How does this work? Could Taylor's reopen under new ownership?
I believe it can. I mean, I think that's a possibility, but it would just depend on the OLCC. A new owner would have to apply for a new license, and it would start all over.
So I'm thinking some opportunistic person who is a reputable business person could go, look, there's a brand here that could probably overcome this. This is a 100-year-old thing. We go out, we put our good name behind it. The OLCC knows we're a good actor and we're back open. It to me caught my attention on social media. And then I read your stories and I was like, the stakes are just too high. If you're having rape allegations, and this is not something that should be near a campus.
Yeah. And the new owner can take his case to the Oregon Court of Appeals if he chooses to, but I don't know if he's planning to do that or not.
Just bizarre story. All right, where will people go? Is there a winner here? Like, is there another bar that people will just wander down the street to?
I'm not sure what the future holds. There's quite a few bars in that area, so I don't know where the new hotspot will be, because I know Taylor's was such an institution, and people lined up out the door to go there on the weekends especially. So I don't know where the new hotspot will be, but there's quite a few in that area.
The owner, I'm going to mess his name here, is it Ramsey?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't he talk to you? What reason did you get?
Well, he just didn't respond, so I don't have a reason for why he didn't want to talk to me. But prior, he had talked to me about improvements that he was making at the bar. But ever since the decision to pull his license was made last Thursday, I haven't heard anything from him.
What did he say to you when he was talking to you?
He said that he had made some improvements to the bar. I had asked what kinds of improvements. He mentioned getting rid of that bucket drink. He also mentioned getting new cameras and imposing a $40 cover for people who were not students of the university. And I found out last week that that was actually a $20 cover that he imposed. And then he also had mentioned getting rid of that bucket drink, but I found out he got rid of it only once his inventory had run out.
Convenient. You're doing a great job. And you know, I know that Eugene is, it's a college town. Did you get any backlash personally? Did people get upset at you reporting it? Or do they kind of understand the stakes and the reasons why they're losing their liquor license?
I think initial reaction for people, especially people who went to the university or go there now, they were surprised and upset that we were reporting this, particularly up until this point, you know, reporting it before because they thought I was encouraging this license to be revoked. And I was just reporting the facts. But I think that once people realized how many serious incidents were occurring there, most of our comments and responses to our story have been that, you know, it's about time given that this has happened for 2 years and nothing's been done about it. You know, the number of assaults and rapes and druggings and those kinds of accusations that have been made.
I heard from parents on social media when I tweeted, that you're reporting, who said, I'm glad it's closed. I have a daughter who goes to the school, and they were relieved that, you know, somebody was paying attention, the OLCC doing the right thing there. Chelsea, you did a great job with this. Continue to do what you do.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. There's Chelsea Deffenbacher, Eugene Register Guard. Have you been to Taylor's? Do you know the origin of the bucket drink? I'm fascinated now by this bucket drink. Is this like the hurricane when you're in New Orleans?
It's not really. The bucket drink, it's not as big as like your typical sand pail. Don't think it's like a foot tall, but they do have these at clubs in Portland.
Really?
I've seen, yeah. It's just a mixture of like Red Bull, so your heart's pounding, plus with alcohol, which is a depressant, so it just like is very bad.
Seems very confusing.
Yeah.
Like they're just wringing out the bar rags and whatever alcohol that can get into the bucket.
Plus some fruit juice.
What happened to just having a drink with your friends? I guess, you know, the college bar that I used to go to that was near our college had a, they did iced teas. Okay? They did like 50 different versions of the Long Island iced tea. And if the bartender really liked you, like if he recognized you or you were a good tipper, the bartender would take the straw. It was this big fat straw. It's like one of those straws you get on like the Bobo tea and like the really just big straw. And he, right when he finished the drink, he would take rum or he would take vodka and he'd fill up the straw too. So your first swig was just essentially like a shot. But I knew like one of those, I was good for the night. Two of those was not going to be good. I knew that. Here's where it gets, like, for me, it gets scary to me when you go 42 serious incidents, including assaults, druggings, and rapes. Then you look at the fact that they had, you know, 400 police calls, almost 500 police calls in the same time that their competitors were getting 80. Josh is in Eugene. He says he worked at Taylor's. Josh, what's up, man?
Hey, I worked there from 2002 to 2012, prior to the new ownership and
okay.
The really bad incidents being reported. But I just wanted to, I don't know, chime in on a couple of things.
Go ahead.
I know, like the reporter was talking about comparing Taylor's to Rennie's. And if you ever go, those places are like apples and oranges.
Sure.
Because Taylor's is more like a club style, and Rennie's is more of like the happy hour bar. So what would happen is people would start at Rennie's and then end at Taylor's. So they're way more intoxicated at the end of the night by Taylor's. You know, that's why more incidents, I think, were occurring, too. And also, the incidents started going up as the U of O athletics got better. Those like national championship years, all of a sudden we were not, it wasn't just students. You were getting all these people coming out from Portland and you're mixing full grown adults with students who are acting like kids.
Right.
And it just was, it was like putting gasoline on a fire and things would explode. And that place would get so busy that we would have 20 security guys, and it was still too difficult to regulate anything that was going on.
Because what did you feel like at the end of a night there when it was a busy night, it's shoulder to shoulder, there's stuff going on, you go home, what's that feeling?
I was a bartender there, and you felt like you got hit by a truck. And I will say one example. College game day, when they set up, would set up right outside the door of Taylor's. It was literally outside the door. And when college game day was in town, we would be full capacity all the way till 2:30, kick everybody out. We'd have to clean up everything. And then the same night shift would just reopen at 7 a.m. as minute you could serve alcohol, and we'd be packed again. And then day shift would come in at like 9, and we'd get like a 5-6 hour nap and have to come back. It was like really, literally, as far as bartending goes, it felt like going to war sometimes. But it was that busy of a place. And I am not diminishing any of the incidents that happened.
Sure.
Some of the decisions and things that were made under the new ownership were foolish. But I'm just speaking from experience. It's really hard for a small amount of people, of, you know, I guess 25 staff members on at a time, to regulate when you have, you know, 800 people inside your building.
What's the right solution for Taylor's, Josh? You worked there a decade. So is it somebody reputable buying it, or is it just shuttering the doors and somebody could start over two blocks away?
I think it has to be somebody reputable buying it. Another way that you could go, I was talking with somebody the other day, I feel like a corporate entity come in, like a Buffalo Wild Wings or something, and just kill that location, just because, you know, they would still have alcohol, but they'd be more of a corporate, you know, everything measured out, nobody gets overserved, that kind of thing. It would just take the, you know, I mean, let's face it, Taylor's was a Greek life bar. It was a frat sorority bar, and you mix that with, you know, outside entities, other people coming because of, like I said, all everything correlates with sports. And when the sports teams got better, they got busier, and it was just a mix of different demographics of people, and it just spilled over into what we saw happen just recently.
Fascinating. All right, I appreciate you calling in, man. I love that. It's the power of the show. I mean, we get a guy who's been there 10 years. Leave it here. You got the BFT. Coming up, top of the hour, Crazy George coming on the show. George Henderson, the first professional cheerleader in the history of sports. Did you know the Kansas City Chiefs once tried to hire him? I think they did hire him. They hired him after Lamar Hunt, the owner of the Chiefs, saw him cheer at a San Jose Earthquakes game. He was like, I want that guy at my stadium. Brought him out for an NFL game in Kansas City. I'll talk to Crazy George. We'll catch up with him. I don't know if you've ever heard Crazy George before today or heard of him, but I can guarantee you he will not be boring. It'll be good radio coming up just a few minutes away. 9-year-old Australian boy in the news. Story caught my eye because we're all talking about social media and kids and parenting. This is stuff we've been talking about in the last few weeks. But there's a 9-year-old Australian kid named, I'm going to mess this up, Quaidon Bales. He has a form of dwarfism. There was a video his mom took that she put on Facebook. He's just getting in the car after school. It's heartbreaking. He's sobbing. He is so upset. Kids have been making fun of him. He's getting bullied at school. And he gets in the car and he's crying. And his mom put the phone on him and recorded him. And probably is just tired of kids doing this to him. She recorded him sobbing. She recorded him saying that he wanted to commit suicide and he was upset and they make fun of me. And it's just heartbreaking as a parent. And the good that came out of this is that somebody started a GoFundMe and $440,000 was donated. And, and a lot of awareness was drawn towards bullying. And maybe some parents talk to their kids about bullying other kids. The bad thing is now other parents are copying this because they've seen this can get your kid some attention and raise some money. It's horrible. The 9-year-old didn't have a choice in this. He's just upset and he's trying to vent to his mom. She puts him on camera. What's wrong with this?
What's money going to do?
It's not solving his bullying problem. The awareness, I think, is more valuable. But when your kid's nine, your kid doesn't have the ability to consent to that.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.